Welcome to the Financial Management Magazine podcast series, a service of the Association of International Certified Professional Accountants. This series features discussions with chartered global management accountants and other experts about the topics, trends and technologies that are transforming the accounting profession.
What superpower do accountants have? And how can they use that power to help drive business decisions? I'm Neil Amato, a senior editor with FM Magazine. I'm talking about accountant superpowers and more in this episode with Donnie Shimamoto. Donnie is the founder and managing director of Intraprise Technologies. He is a CPA who holds designations as a certified information technology professional and chartered global management accountant. Here's our conversation. Donnie, thanks for being here today.
Oh, it's a pleasure. Thanks for having me.
We're going to cut right to the chase. You've talked about four stages of accounting organization evolution. What are they? And where in general are organizations on the path these days?
Well, first, let me give credit, because this is really something that comes from McKinsey. And McKinsey originally had put it out forward as the evolution of the finance function. And I actually like to switch that to be the accounting function, because I think it's more than just what we're looking at in finance. So if we start off at the first stage of the evolution, it's really about transaction management. And that was when, as accountants, we did bookkeeping, and that because it's really financial accounting. So they kind of look at that as the first stage, and I like to look at that and go, okay, well, technology has actually come in and it has enabled us to go past that. And so we've evolved then into the second stage. So the second stage is really about controlling the business. And it's often where I think of the controller or CFO role starts to come in. Actually, it's really the controller role. And that's where the name comes from, I think. How do we help control the business or control the money within the business? So we see the expansion in the second phase of looking more at management reporting rather than just financial reporting. We'll see the move towards tax or audit as looking at controls or assurance around what's happening there. And then the last one is really about treasury. And we all know that cash is king, right? Especially in small and mid-sized businesses. So it's the evolution into the controllership and looking at all of these other areas that we're working in. The key when we go into controllership is really about internal controls, and it translates into us being process managers and making sure that we have a low level of error, whether it's truly through error or fraud, in those processes. And that, while great, is still something that we now see as we see more automations, as we see more the accounting systems are evolving into enterprise resource planning or ERP systems. We're seeing those become stronger and be able to automate. So then we work into the third evolution, which is really about financial planning and analysis. And often the second evolution in larger companies, we'll see it as the controller function. FP&A or financial planning analysis is this third evolution. And we'll often see those two be very different parts of the overall accounting function. Controllership more about transactions, tax, managing compliance, or historical, with FP&A really being more future-oriented and really looking at the planning, what's going to happen, what do we think is going to happen, what could happen. In that stage, what we're now trying to do is look at what are the important drivers, you know, what are doing analytics against what happened, how do we either make something good happen more or stop something bad from happening in the future. And though this third evolution is still often very finance focused, so it's still around budgeting, it's often around planning, it might be forecasting, but again, often all of this is within finance. So the fourth evolution sets us up for integrated functional excellence, where it's not just finance, but it's really looking at operations and across the entire organization. Look at how am I optimizing the organization as a whole? How am I driving better, improved performance as a whole? How am I also perhaps looking at sales and business development and external factors? So it's a much broader span of what we're looking at.
And where would you say some, most, all companies are on that path?
So we're seeing quite a bit of diversity in terms of where people are. A lot of the larger companies have evolved quite a bit to get into that fourth stage. We see a lot of smaller businesses often tend to be at that second stage, and it's that controllership. And if we were to look at what's been happening over the last several years, we see this big push or this big communications push around how do you go from controller to CFO. And it's the controller to CFO, which I often think of as the move from the second stage to the third stage. Controller, again, being more historical, the CFO really being more broader and looking more forward and thinking about value management rather than just, you know, financial management. So I think it's spread a bit all over. I will say, too, that I don't think all organizations have to make it to the fourth stage. It really depends upon the organization, what their needs are and what they're trying to do.
So going to that fourth stage, you know, if companies are able to harness technology to kind of eliminate most or all of the first stage, or they're just trying to be more forward-looking, period, is that a problem if everyone is trying to get to the fourth stage in an organization?
I would actually say no. I mean, when we look at the evolution, so let's think about the different eras that we've been in. So if we go from the industrial era into the information age, and often it's now looking at we're in the knowledge age. So if we can all shift and move more in towards the knowledge age, it is actually the better enlightenment of our society, right? That's the grand scheme of like everyone's in this fourth evolution. Is it a bad thing? No. It'd be great because all of us will essentially be optimized, or all of our organizations will be optimized. The interesting thing when we get to that fourth stage is going to be if right now the third and fourth stages are what are providing competitive advantage to firms, then if everyone's in that fourth stage, what is then going to be our competitive differentiator? I don't know if we have an answer to that right now.
Stay tuned. So speaking of technology and where things are headed, you have said emerging technologies have reached a maturity point. What do you mean by that?
So if we look at each of the stages, technology is actually going to play a pretty heavy role in helping us transition from one to the other. So in the first stage, it was really about bookkeeping, and we moved from paper ledgers into something as simple as Quicken or QuickBooks now, right? And that's normally what we think of. And now even in mid-market and larger, we're thinking about the ERPs. So we've got that that's helped us move from that first stage. In the second stage, actually, that's where we're now going to see ERP and we see other things start to come into play. And I can look at my tax compliance management. I've got software that helps me with tax compliance management and software that can actually produce the tax return. And I've got software that helps me do the audit. And then in the third stage, we've got corporate performance management or enterprise performance management software that's helping me with budgeting and planning and doing modeling and forecasting. What we're going to see as we see big data and artificial intelligence start to come in and play in these areas is that those technologies will help accelerate what we're able to do. And these are not going to be just things that big companies are able to do. Amazon, Microsoft have their cloud services for artificial intelligence, for big data, where even a small company that may not truly have big, big data, but just has data, is able to leverage a slice of a tool through the cloud to pull insights out, to do analytics that previously, you know, you would have had to have a huge investment in. So I think we're going to see these emerging technologies come into play probably within the next couple of years. You know, it's not, we used to talk about it being far off, but it's really in the next couple of years that we're going to see this huge impact across all different sides of organizations.
No, because obviously 2020 used to sound like a long way away. It is not far away at all.
You're right. It is not. And remember, too, that these changes are not linear. And I think that was the fallacy that we often see in a lot of the projections. People often said it was a linear, so they would have said last year, even as much as a year or two ago, we would have heard people say, hey, these things are 4 to 5 years out. What we're seeing now is that people are saying, hey, these are 2, 3, maybe even 1 year out, right? So it's hitting that curve on the exponential change, and as we know, exponential change keeps accelerating. So it might even be closer than we think.
Kind of a side topic on this, but about technology and smaller companies, we collaborated recently, I guess, on an article that mentioned this, that companies that are adapting technology are actually better able to recruit maybe even younger tech savvy workers, because they don't want to come and do that backward looking transactional work, because one, they haven't been taught it, and two, it just doesn't seem like something they'd want to do in their job.
Right. And that again is where we're going to see this artificial intelligence and all these things come in, because that historical side is very programmatic. It tends to be very monotonous and very robotic, to purposely throw that word in there, because we can now use accounting robots to automate a lot of that. You know, the tax return, the reason that TurboTax is so popular is because now we can automate the actual return. And so we're seeing the shift in what we as accountants need to do.
You have said accountants have a secret power, a special power. That's the power to influence decisions. How can they properly use those powers, and kind of what are the skills they need to work on to be better at that?
I love that you picked up on that one. The we're often criticized as accountants as being kind of that boring one. And so I think sometimes within us, we secretly want to be that superhero, right? And that everyone loves. And whether you realize it or not, we've got the superpower, which is the power to influence. And while it might not be reading minds or controlling minds, which controlling minds is going to have some ethical implications there, this power to influence is something that we greatly hold. And I always use the example, the extreme example is that there's some department manager that'll come in and have an idea, and the controller or CFO will go, "Great idea, but it's going to kill us financially, and here's why." And that project is dead. And so that's an example where we look at it and we go, hey, the controller CFO may not have been the key decision maker, but their influence or the ability to provide insight into the impacts of what's happening is a great influence in making that final decision to kill that project. Now, that might be something good if it was something that was really going to have a bad effect. It may not be something good if it was something that could have some potential. And so the second part of that is really taking the project and going, well, here are the parts that are not going to work, and let's rework them. And let's figure out whether through doing some analytics or doing some additional research, how we can make these work. And that's the shift of the CFO from that naysayer, that gatekeeper, over to someone that's really a success enabler, or someone that can help drive and bring innovation and transformation into an organization.
And so, are there some influencing skills that are involved? It's not just they have the access to the numbers, therefore it is so.
That's the power, right? Access to the numbers. No, the research actually shows us that there are a few steps. And again, I'm going to give credit. This is coming from IBM's research in looking at some of their CEO surveys. So this is coming from the executive level, where if we just give people access to information, we make it available to them, they can get to the data rather than hoarding it and keeping it to ourselves, we can actually improve an organization's performance by 108%. Now, take that one step further and actually pull the insights out. So not just analyze it, but what are the insights what is the data telling us? What is the story it's telling us? What are the things that it will call out to say, these are the problems, or these are the good things as well, and we need to replicate them more. Pulling those insights out give us another 108% improvement. And then take it to that final step and then identify the action or the decision that needs to be made to actually enact change and truly impact those metrics. That's going to give us another 84%. And actually, if I did that right, I think it's 108, 108, 84. In total, 300% improvements in performance in an organization if we actually use our powers for good and help get the right information with the right insights to drive the right decision making.
So on that right information front, there's then, I guess, a next step. I'm going to call it your 7-Eleven example. This is not about drinking Slurpees or anything like that, but it's passing along the information that maybe goes beyond the executive level to get the whole company to buy in.
Right. And so the key as we look at this, especially as we get into that fourth evolution of going into functional excellence, is really about getting information to the staff person or the line person and helping drive the right decisions to be made at that level. Because if we wait until the end of the month already is already closed, and it's too late, and it's done. It's in set in stone, right? So what we actually need to do is to do more real-time reporting, and I don't mean like right now, but whatever real-time is for the different types of business, and get that information to an operational person's hands where they can actually make a decision. And the key is to not get all the information, because especially in this 7-Eleven example, we've got, you know, lower paid workers, less educated workers. So I need to give them something that they can control. I need to give them metrics or have them look at things where they feel like they have control. Because otherwise, they're just going to look at it and go, I don't know where this number comes from. Like, how, what am I supposed to do? So if we keep that simple, you know, if we look at this whole, like, the KISS method, right? Keep it simple. And so if we keep it simple, we make it things that they can affect, then their behavior will change, or at least we hope their behavior will change. And it, making that change at that operational level over the course of the month, which should allow us to improve performance in that month. And so as I build that out, you can kind of start to see where, yeah, getting things all the way down, this is why it's 300%. It's not some revolutionary thing. It's just getting everybody right aligned or aligned to the strategy and each playing their own part.
Are there any specifics you can use to illustrate that, either with 7-Eleven or with a call center example?
You remember my call center example. Yeah. So the call center example, what I often think of as driving, right? This is driving the right behaviors. And this is the other side of, as I start to track things and I start to analyze things, is people become aware of what I'm tracking. So in a call center, this is actually a little bit of an older story, but it's always a good one, I think, and relevant, because with the call center, we could use multiple metrics to really identify what makes a good call center. And so a company, this is actually based on real life, a company had used the call center metric of shortest call times. We want to get people, we don't want our customers sitting on the line with you. And so, well, that was the instruction given to all the call center staff. So their objective was to get the customer off the phone as fast as possible. Which, given the framework I'm already giving you, you're probably going, oh my gosh, that's bad. And yeah, it was. So what we need to do is also make sure that we're not just using one metric, but that we're using a balanced set of metrics. So shortest call time, because yeah, if I was a customer and I'm on the line and I'm spending a long time, I don't want to sit there with the phone on my ear, right? So let's use a different metric as well. How did we solve their problem in the first call? That's another important one. I think all of us would agree, right? I don't want to have to keep calling you back. So if you're going to tell me, well, try this, and I'm like, okay, well, let me go and try that. And you're like, okay, call me back after you try that. I'm like, oh my gosh, I got to call you back, right? So solving it on the first time, perhaps staying with them, which is going to go against the other metric, but letting them actually try it and see whether it works. And then there might be other metrics that are down the line, like customer satisfaction. How satisfied were you? You know, so that's why a lot of times we get these surveys. And for me, being someone that actually does this type of research and works with them, I'm like, I always respond because I feel like that's probably me on the other side trying to get some metrics around what was actually good or not. But that's where that's coming from. You know, so it's getting that feedback. Did we actually meet your expectations? Did we solve it? Did the agent seem to know what they were talking about? Maybe there's a problem in my training program for my support agents. So it's a lot of different things to think about.
Well, Donnie, this has been excellent. Anything you want to say to kind of wrap up kind of where the finance function is as you see it?
I think we're in this great point right now. We've talked about the technology, and that technology is actually going to come in and it's going to help get rid of all of this manual, transactional level, really non-value-added work. And I know sometimes that's a cliche, this value-added versus non-value-added. But if I can automate it, I might as well automate it. Then I can focus more of my time on actually doing the analysis and pulling the insights out. And that's the core of what we do as accountants, is really understanding what's going on, or I should actually say helping other people understand what's going on with an objective viewpoint, and also helping them understand what is the right thing to do, what is the ethical thing to do. And if we can help businesses make better decisions, better, right, ethical decisions, then we can really help improve the world. And that's where I think we really are in our profession.
Again, that was Donnie Shimamoto with Intraprise Technologies. For more conversations on the topics, trends, and tech transforming the accounting profession, go to fm-magazine.com/podcast. Thank you for listening.
This podcast is designed to provide illustrative information with respect to the subject matter covered and does not represent an official opinion or position of the Association of International Certified Professional Accountants or any of its subsidiaries or affiliates. It is provided with the understanding that the association, its affiliates, and subsidiaries are not engaged in rendering legal, accounting, or other professional services. If such advice or expert assistance is required, the services of a competent professional person should be sought. The association, its subsidiaries, and affiliates make no representations, warranties, or guarantees as to and assume no responsibility for the content or application of the material contained herein, and expressly disclaim all liability for such damages arising out of the use of, reference to, or reliance on such material.